Thanks so much, Peggy, for getting us, I think, really emotionally into that passage as well. You always emote your reading so well. Donna, I know I stuck you with another of the list. I don't know how we do it. Like, every time you got the crazy names and places and everything else. And you always do a great job, though. I appreciate you pushing through. And let's give another round of applause for Katie. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for stepping up to do that, and you did a great job. And it's so nice to have that range of things. We have bells, we have choral stuff, we have flute, we have piano. It's great to see that range of gifts in our congregation that we share with each other and that we offer to God in worship. And it's just a reminder, too, if anybody's got any of those things, we want to have an outlet for you. So talk to me, and we love to see how we all come together to worship God. So we're transitioning now into summer. And into what may become a tradition. We did something like this last year, too. I kind of like when we're in summer, and maybe some of us are in and out a little bit, but we've got, you know, traveling, vacation, doing things a little bit differently on the brain, to have a series that sort of reflects that and maybe gives people, even if you're in and out, a chance to come in and have a fun, interesting, different angle on a sermon and not feel like you missed out on something that may have been building throughout the series. And so we're doing our Finding Faith Off the Beaten Path sermon series. And to start it off, I actually want to give you a story about a pretty literal experience of going off of a certain path. So a few years ago, I was working at a church down by Ohio State's campus. And one night, I was having dinner after an event with the senior pastor, who's a woman, and two of our interns, also young women, who were in seminary at the time. And we were just reflecting on what we've been working on, enjoying time together. And then this was on the main drag of High Street. Church was a couple blocks east of there. And so as we got out of the restaurant, we need to walk back to the church and go about the rest of our evenings, drive home. So I started walking down the street, and then I kind of naturally, as we're walking and having conversation, turned to start going east towards the church. And I knew there was kind of like a shortcut between some houses that were there that was sort of like a vacant lot. And so I could do a more direct line straight to the church and save some time to get back. And so I started walking the other direction, and all the women just kept walking straight down High Street. And we looked at each other, like, realized, oh, wait a minute, we're not on the same page here. What's going on? And so the senior pastor, named April, she said, oh, are you going that way? And I said, well, yeah, that, you know, you can kind of do like a nice straight line. We won't have to do two sides of a triangle. We can kind of do the hypotenuse to get there. And so for me, it was just natural, like, I can just walk there. And she goes, oh, yeah, I mean, you're like a big, tall guy. Like, we were going to walk on the main street where there's lights and everything else, and I guess we can walk with you that way. It's faster. Like, you're with us. It should be okay. But I had that moment of choosing paths, going what I thought was in my brain, according to my calculus, the most natural way to go. What was most important to me in evaluating that situation was, like, how can I get there quickly? And there were other things that had never come into my mind for how to think about it. And yet, for them, the opposite was true. They were not going to be thinking as much about efficiency so much as potential safety for themselves. And so they were going to walk a different way. And here's the thing. You know, generally want to try to aspire to be considerate and empathetic and see things from other people's perspectives to validate that when that happens. That I'd even had conversations before to try to understand the range of ways that women can experience the world differently than me and think and have to think about things that I don't have to think about. But in that moment, my just sort of natural way of going about things kicked in instead. And so then even that goal of the type of person I try to be came face-to-face with different ways that we naturally go about operating and walking in the world. And that was especially striking to me at the time, again, because I'd had conversations about that. It hadn't happened in a while, maybe especially like when I was in seminary or college and was walking around with other people, especially single women, but where I was in that stage of life, I wasn't having a lot of those types of conversations or walks where they would notice that we would go in different directions. But I have a daughter now. She was turning, I think, about probably 6 or 7 then. And so suddenly, I'm like, oh, she's going to have to think about this. That's what her life is going towards. She's going to be ready. And I am not ready for that. I might think that I'm supportive and thoughtful about those things, but my brain obviously still is not on the same wavelength. And that's something I need to be mindful of and ready to go about being more listening, being more learning, being more empathetic to people in my life who could help me understand that better. So today we're all thinking about those special relationships we have with our dad, with our male mentors. We're celebrating all the ways that people have been formative in our lives, or hopefully we've been able to be formative in other people's lives. But we have to admit that that relationship is also formative for the dad, for the mentor. We are shaped by our kids and by those mentoring relationships just as much as well, even if we're, quote-unquote, the mature, wise, responsible adult. Because there are times that we are going to realize that our kids are facing something that we have not experienced before, that we are going to look at and experience slightly differently. And in those moments, we really get the chance to see, I still need to be learning. I still need to be understanding. There's more of the world that I can absorb. And it's especially through those connections. We love when we can see ourselves in our kids, see ourselves in the people that we love and care about and take care of. It's exciting when there are those natural connections. For me, I love going to crew games with my kids. I love playing video games and Switch with them. I love getting to connect in their range of interests and things that they love to participate. I connect with them on that. When there's something going on at school that they can help out with or go out for or whatever else, they're going to try. And I love to see that too, and I empathize with them. I feel that connection. But we also know that if we get too sucked into that viewpoint and we just see our kids or the people we're caring for as mini-me's or just vessels for all the stuff we love that we're going to cram down their throat, force into them to be exactly like us, that we'll be missing out on something. I am not somebody who's good at like marking occasions, but Aislinn will plan a party for like Arbor Day if she can come up with it, invite people over and do tons of decorations. I don't know where that came from, but it's amazing. I can be kind of serious. I was even when I was growing up. I mean, I'll make little jokes and stuff, but it tends to be dry. Cohen has this joyful silliness that has never been exactly my personality, but getting to see him do that is an amazing gift to my life. He connects with animals in this way that I was never able to. And it's really wonderful to know that that is now part of my life because it's a part of theirs. I need to see that as a gift. And so we've been able to have lots of chances probably to see the world a little bit differently from our kids, from other people in our lives. But sometimes we get excited about that. Sometimes that creates conflict or tension or it makes us feel a little bit nervous or insecure. With COVID, we experienced that in my family too. Doing schoolwork in particularly just ratchet up the tension, like the stakes, and showed ways that we process the world differently where it wasn't always easy or like an automatic celebration. Aislinn can get very anxious about schoolwork. And so she tries really hard. She's smart. She does good. But if things seem like they might be a little bit trickier, she's not sure she understands it right away, she can get a little bit panicky. And I am not good at being there for her in those moments. I'm not a naturally like anxious, worried person. I'm just kind of like, put your nose to the grindstone, figure it out. And so when she's going through that and I'm trying to help her, I have noticed how bad I am at that because my brain just doesn't get to the same place that hers is. And if I try to tell her to be like me, that just makes her spiral out more. But she's actually been really patient with me, and we've learned together how we can understand each other even from those different personality traits. Cohen has this really interesting thing where a lot of the work that he was doing this past year was a little too easy for him. He had a good kindergarten experience. He was good at the computer, so jumping in on his first grade stuff, he felt pretty comfortable with. And he would get frustrated if he had to do work that he's like, I already know this. I'm not learning anything. I'm not challenging myself. My way of doing things in school was always, this is what they asked me to do. I'll do it. just get it done, and then I'll go do whatever the heck I want to do afterwards. It might be like reading or learning something. It might be something completely different. But he would literally not do work because it was too easy. But not so that he could do something else, like he wasn't asking to watch TV or play games. He was like, give me better work. I didn't know. I was like, just get the thing done. Let's move on. Like, why are we fighting about this? But he wanted to do things that were like more interesting and challenging to him. And so I had to learn that same thing. Like, and it did, both of those cases like were tense. And we couldn't get on the same page. And I didn't understand where their mindsets were coming from. They didn't understand how my advice was actually going to be helpful in any way at all. And it was hard. But then it also became a way that we understood new things about the world. The passage in 1 Kings today reminds us, in God speaking to Elijah, right, through a whisper, that God speaks to us in so many ways. Sometimes we expect the earthquake or the windstorm. This actually happened right after, if you know the story of Elijah in the Bible, if you've been to Sunday school, where Elijah called down fire from heaven onto a water-soaked altar to prove that God was God and not Baal was God against these other prophets. So it's not like God was just saying, like, hey, I'm the quiet one. Like, I'm kind of, you know, wallflower in the corner or whatever. You got to remember that, Elijah. Like, the whole range of ways that God can connect to us is in the story of Elijah. That reminds us how God comes to us in all those different ways. Now, interestingly, I think the story about Lazarus in John 11 teaches us that same thing in a more subtle but equally powerful way. Mary and Martha, if you notice, both come to Jesus with the same question. Lord, if you would have come earlier, my brother would not have died. But Jesus' response to both of them is completely different. He talks to Martha about, remember the resurrection. What's your faith? What's your practical response to this? That seems to be exactly what she needs. She has this dialogue with him. It draws things out of her that helps her find hope from her personality. Mary, on the other hand, must have been processing things much more within her heart, with her emotions. And so Jesus' response there is to gather more loved ones around the two of them and to express his own deep emotions. Right? That Jesus wept. Shortest verse in the Bible. People talk about this a lot. Really powerful to see that God would weep, even as he's about to raise Lazarus from the dead. But he's fully present in that moment, exactly what Mary's personality is like. And this doesn't even touch on the fact that around the same story, not in what we read today because it's a long story, but Jesus has an interaction with his disciples about why he's not going to heal Lazarus right away. They think it's because it's close to Jerusalem and the authorities will arrest him and kill him. And so do they want to go and support him and maybe risk death themselves? Or do they want to protect him and keep him away? And so he uses that moment as a way of helping them all face their mortality through Lazarus and through the conflicts they're going to have. And then when he raises Lazarus from the dead, he knows again, like his disciples said, people are going to see this and they're going to want to kill me. But he's still teaching even those authority figures who are watching him and who are going to come after him something about his bravery, something about the power of God, something about who God connects with and what authority from God looks like versus their authority. That God's authority brings life, their authority brings death. This whole range of things, all from one seminal moment. And so when I read this passage, I am super encouraged about my relationship with God because I know that Jesus would respond to my kids in those homework moments or in whatever else in completely different ways, and respond to me and me trying to make sense of what's going on with them in a completely different way, but in that way that each of us need most, because he who made us knows us most and what we need. And so just like we can get this range of ways for appreciating Jesus' love and teachings in the story, I've learned about how different people experience the world as God created them. I've learned more about God and God's love because I've been able now to see God at work in other people's lives in ways that I didn't know and that I didn't understand before. God has become more wonderful and praiseworthy to me because I've seen things that otherwise I would have missed out on if I was too fixated on only being about my own experience. My kids and other people I've interacted with have helped me take my faith off the beaten path, away from just my own personality, my own perspective, the things that are most familiar to me. And so my faith has become so much more rich. I've learned that my job is not to make other people handle things my way. It's to help them be capable of dealing with the challenges they face, celebrating the joys that come along as best as they can as themselves, with their personalities, with their gifts. And then this reminds me a lot of what else God actually goes on to tell Elijah in 1 Kings 9. He doesn't just speak to him in this novel, interesting way. He says something powerful. Elijah just had this grand standoff with the other priests and with the king. He was validated. I'm worshiping the right God. Look, I was a part of this thing where fire came down from the sky. That's amazing. And the first time that God speaks to him after that, he says, okay, but it's not about you. You're not going to be at the center. We could have maximized this. Like, yep, Elijah's awesome. Let's make everybody see the world the way Elijah does. But instead, God gives this direction of what's next is that everything's not going to be about Elijah. He has Elijah expand his perspective, share his conception of what God is up to and who God will include in that mission. He has to share responsibility by passing the torch to Elisha. He has to broaden his partners by appointing new kings who are going to have authority as well. He's inviting more personalities, more perspectives into God's work, even though that means Elijah, this one who seems like he could be at the center, is actually going to have to make room. Man, that is a much harder job than being able to have things exactly your way. I don't like to give up control or preference. Working through issues with my kids, I feel like would have been a lot easier if I could just tell them, this way that has worked for me is exactly the way everyone should do it, and you just need to do better at that. But if I don't take the reality that God wants me to let go, that I am not at the center of everything, that God connects with other people just as importantly and validly and beautifully as he connects with me, if I don't accept that and try to live in it, then I'm going to miss out on the breadth and depth of who God is. My effectiveness of loving and living with people is going to be minimized. And it might even get in the way of their experiencing God's love because they might question, oh, if this person thinks that God doesn't love me this way, maybe God doesn't love me this way. It's so tempting for us to see our lives and our security in the world and our acceptance in the eyes of God as a zero-sum game. We get tempted to be in constant competition or anxiety or defensiveness or resentment with people if they experience the world differently than us. But we should remember that we worship a God of abundance. We don't live in a zero-sum game world. The creator of all reality is who we worship, who loves us and promises that God can give us all that we need. If we root ourselves in that perspective, not only for like, am I going to have enough food? Am I going to have a roof over my head? Or those are important too. But even in our own like emotional state and our sense of how we exist in the world, we can live there. All of our experiences and working things out with people who are different than us, all of that competition, all that resentment, all that defensiveness can just melt away. We can receive what we learn from each other, even when it's challenging or unfamiliar, as a gift, not only from them, but from God. Each interaction and insight becomes another way of experiencing life, another way of experiencing something that God can use to free us and to grow us so that we go beyond our own limitations. We find joy in more things and more ways that God moves. I know so far that my big emphasis has been on Father's Day, but it is worth recognizing, I think, if we're going to be talking about this, that it was just in the news a lot, right? I know Mike got to have a surprise day off on Friday, which was kind of nice, that we have a multi-holiday weekend this weekend, right? Juneteenth has been marked basically since the end of the Civil War by some people, but now it's an official national holiday. It's the holiday that celebrates the end of slavery and the contributions of African Americans to our society, our culture, our lives. We've got this nice slate of summer holidays that we're already like kind of used to the rhythms of, right? You got Memorial Day, then you hang out for a little bit, see school end, got Mother's and Father's Day worked in there, got Independence Day, and then towards the end you got Labor Day kind of wrapping things up. We've got Go Sunday. It might feel like, again, that we have this temptation to like operate in the zero-sum game situation. We can get defensive or anxious about, well, you know, are people telling me I have to celebrate this way? I have to find meaning only in this way? I have to learn about only these types of things? But I really do believe, like we see in our Bible passages, that God is giving us an experience of abundance. The point is not to put all these things in competition with each other, to say that one has to completely go against the other, or that if people want something recognized, that means that it's cheapening other things that we find meaningful. God offers us an abundance that we don't have to get stuck in just our own perspective, in our personal lives, but also in our collective cultural lives. So I do encourage you, whatever it looks like for you, to take a little bit of time and trying out this principle. This is just practice. It's right here in the moment this weekend of letting God give us more things of understanding how God moves in the world, what we can celebrate, how we can find meaning. So if we can learn a little bit about Juneteenth and those it celebrates, we'll get that practice, and then we can turn that same thing in a simple way into being better present for each other in our personal lives and our other relationships, and being open to each other and loving each other just as God loves each one of us as well. Doing this does not negate all the other things that we value or celebrate. It can add to our experience. It could even be a good way that if we put each holiday and the things that we celebrate, the things that we learn about them, in connection with each other, it can enrich each one. And then maybe we're able to see some things that we hadn't gotten to experience before, that we hadn't noticed, but that can become meaningful parts of each of our own lives. And I'll mention, too, that as Christians, I encourage us to add our own special holidays into that same mix to help learn about and think about the meaning of each one. I didn't mention, you may have noticed, something like Pentecost. It's a really big Christian holiday from our faith. And I didn't mention something like World Communion Sunday. Those are both holidays that are really meaningful to us as Christians and that help us remember the movement of God's Spirit for all types of people to bring about unity and justice. And that might even help us find new meaning in our other holidays that we're celebrating for different reasons throughout the summer too. So there's an old parable that you might have heard about before that to me kind of distills all of this down in the simplest way. It's about a bunch of blind monks. And they get led by one of their other brother monks to an elephant. And he spreads them around the elephant and says, go ahead, feel this thing. Tell me what you think it is. And because they're all touching different parts of the elephant, a leg here, a tail there, an ear here, a trunk here, a tusk there, they start fighting with each other about what it is that they are experiencing, because each one feels a little bit different. And they can't see the whole picture. And they just keep, you know, it just basically devolves into just, you know, completely missing the point, just yelling at each other, not trying to get anything at all. And so then finally their monk that led them there in the first place has to be like, guys, you're all within, you know, just a few feet of each other. Did you think that possibly this could all be something that you're seeing one piece of? And so then when they're able to recognize the full picture that they all have an element of, their wisdom deepens not only about the thing that they're experiencing, but about their relationships with each other and their relationships with the world and with knowledge. What I hope that we get from today is that we all want as much of the elephant of God as we possibly can. I want all the elephant, but I can't get there on my own. I need all of you. I need other people in my life. We want to be better parents, spouses, friends, in loving people in our lives for who they are. We want to be better citizens, so that other people around us, whether we know them or not, can thrive and live their best lives as well. We want to appreciate, love, and worship who God is in God's fullness, not just what we already know in our own personality, but also know that God has amazing things for others, for what they've needed, and in ways that we wouldn't know on our own. And so ultimately, we want to see what God is doing in the world to make it a better place, to give us all something to share and celebrate. And not just through me, and not just for me, but all of the ways that God moves and can do this in every single unique person for every single unique experience. I found that to be amazingly worshipful. I found that to be amazingly formational. I found that to help me connect with each of you here in this room in ways that I'm so thankful that I haven't had to miss out on. And I hope that God will continue to take us on those paths together, even if it ends up being some rabbit trails because we're going a little bit where everybody else wants to go to. As we think about that perspective and try to offer what we have, our resources, our hearts, I'm going to ask Peggy to come up and give a testimony about things she hopes for this coming season and pray for our offering.